This podcast is brought to you by the North Star, an independent media company fully supported by our members at thenorthstar.com. We are able to speak truth to power without fear or hesitation because people just like you support this work with their monthly and annual contributions. If you're already a member, thank you. If not, join us so that we can continue our liberation journalism through podcasts, articles, activism, and so much more. Again, join us now at thenorthstar.com.
This is Ray King.
And this is Sean King.
And we are
Married to the Movement. Married to the Movement.
Okay, so on this episode of Married to the Movement, we're actually going to talk about some happy things. We're going to talk about some different highlights that we've experienced over the last 5 years in this movement. It hasn't all been gloom and doom and, you know, hurt and sadness. There's been a ton of that for sure. But there have also been some really cool moments. And so today we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, like, I think it's just like how the human brain works, that when you look back over time, it's easy for your mind to gravitate to low moments and struggles and controversies.
Right. You know what? I had somebody explain that to me, actually, because I was talking about how you can get 100 compliments, but it's those two or three, you know, negative comments that really stick with you. And she was explaining to me that that is because, like, our brains are wired for survival. And so, like, literally when you think about, you know, maybe cavemen and women going out and hunting and gathering, their eyes were trained to look for the poisonous berries and because that's what they knew they needed to avoid, because that's what was going to cause them damage. Danger. And so it could be a forest full of delicious berries that were going to be good for you. But when you're out picking, your eyes are trained to make sure you noticed those dangerous ones. And so, like, fast forward through evolution, you know, and here we are now, and our brains are still hardwired to look for what's dangerous. And the negative moments and the hard times, those are the things that our brain senses danger, can cause danger to us. And so that's why they stick out to us.
I believe it.
And yeah, it made a lot of sense when she said that.
But it's good sometimes to just pause and say, we've had some good moments.
Yeah.
And we've had highlights and had so many things that we've enjoyed across the years.
One of my favorites for sure happened this year at the Diamond Ball with Rihanna. One, I did enjoy meeting her. It's so funny. My kids, one of my teenagers, one of the first questions they asked me was, oh, did Rihanna smell good? And I was like, what are you talking about? But I was like, you know what? She did smell really good when she came over and met us and hugged us. Right. And I did. I noticed that she smelled really good. And then my girl said, that's like a whole thing on the internet. I had no idea. But the Diamond Ball was fun, actually. I mean, obviously, everything that happened around it was very stressful.
You want to mention that real quick, just in case people didn't know?
Well, yeah. I mean, so you got an award from Rihanna for your activism and all the ways in which you've helped hurting families over these past several years, and, you know, a few people, and mostly controlled by bots, in my opinion, decided to lose their minds over that as if you had not done those things. It was wild to me. Like, literally, I still can't really wrap my mind around it, you know. Excuse me, a lot of people said, you know, oh, it's jealousy. I just still have a hard time believing that, but neither here nor there. A couple people decided to lose their minds over it. And, you know, you were trending, and it was just wild. And so it kind of put a bit of a cloud over the whole event, which I guess was really their goal.
Right.
To be honest, but just you
and I think their goal was to get Rihanna to cancel.
Oh, for sure.
And for her foundation to withdraw the award.
Yeah.
And once they didn't, there was a lot of stress coming up through the day and the days before it. But once we finally got there, We had a good time.
Yeah, we did. We had a really good time. And it was crazy just to see all these celebrities walking around, people that you normally just see on TV or, you know, on social media, like they're in the flesh. I had a really good time picking out my dress and getting my hair and nails done and trying on different shoes. Like, that was a lot of fun. My makeup, though, how about that story?
I forgot about that.
Oh, my gosh. I caught myself trying to be fancy and have somebody.
I wish we had that sister's name because people need to know.
No, we would not put her on blast. But she did come to our hotel room to do my makeup, and one of my best friends was sitting there talking to me and watching. And I don't know how she kept a straight face the entire time, because when that woman was done and I went to the bathroom and looked at myself in the mirror, I literally was like, "Oh my god!" And like, I couldn't even help it. And the makeup artist
scared
was like,
yourself,
right? No, literally. I was like, who the hell is that looking back at me in the mirror? It was crazy. I looked ridiculous. Like, she had completely contoured my face. And, you know, like, you know me, I don't do makeup like that.
Right.
In the mornings,
right.
I put on some concealer to hide the darkness under my eyes and a little bit of Fenty foundation on top of that. I was hit it with some bronzer and call it a day. Like, that's my makeup routine.
Right.
And so this woman, oh my
gosh. She did
gosh,
too much.
She did too much. I looked crazy. And so, like, I paid her, gave her a little tip or whatever, and then, like,
you had to wash all that off, right?
Yeah, quickly shoot her out the door, and then me and my girlfriend, like, had to fix my face. Like, literally, fix my face. It was crazy. I had to take it all off and just do my regular old basic makeup routine. So,
well, for me, there were some highlights of that night, but literally, moments before the Diamond Ball started, DeRay dropped a blog, and it's like, how petty is it?
Oh my gosh, it was so effing petty. And
how
really,
petty is it to drop a blog before the Diamond Ball?
Well, it took away from the night for Rihanna,
it
really.
Did. It did.
You know what I'm saying? And what that night was supposed to be about. It was just selfish, and it was stupid. Like, it just literally said a bunch of nothing. You know, I could go on and on and on about this thing. Like, few things make me, like, fighting mad, like this whole situation.
Well, I think,
like, I could cut some people.
Well, I'll tell you what was beautiful about the Diamond Ball and what ended up meaning so much to me and was bigger than DeRay's blog or me trending on Twitter. And it was frustrating because during the Diamond Ball, I was instead of the Diamond Ball being the number one trending topic on Twitter, I was the number one trending topic on Twitter. But inside of the ball, where you could not have cameras, could not have phones.
But this is why I can't take Twitter seriously, because I'm just like, you are the number one trending topic. Like, are you serious? All the different things going on in the world, and you, who
right.
most of the world has no idea who you
right.
are, you're the number one trending topic. That's why I'm not on Twitter. That's why I don't take Twitter seriously, because that's just stupid.
It's stupid, but what was beautiful about the Diamond Ball, I guess there were two or three things that I thought were particularly beautiful. One, we got a chance to learn about all the great work that Rihanna is actually doing all over the world.
Right.
And her foundation is a serious foundation. And that's what frustrated me about the smears and all that. It took away from the work that she was doing. But because when you're in the event, you can't have your phones out, you're just focusing and concentrating. And they had videos and stories of the work that she did. But also, we got a lot of love from the people that were there, who knew me and knew us and knew the work and were deeply appreciative, including Rihanna and Cardi.
Oh, yeah, meeting Cardi, that was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah.
She's wild.
Yeah, I mean, the character that she is on Instagram, that's not pretend. That's who she is all the time. Like, she's on. And but,
well, she was also in a space. I don't know if she's like that all the time. I don't know. But she was also in a space where, you know, she was kind of on. But she looked beautiful and loved meeting her.
And she was sweet to you and sweet to us.
Yeah, yeah. She was. She was very kind. So, you know, it was crazy. But that was definitely a highlight for me.
I mean, for me, when I think about over the past 5 years, moments that stood out to me and meant a lot to me, you know, we've talked about this on previous episodes, but I was a pastor for many years. And even when I went to seminary and I did an internship at Emory Hospital as a chaplain at Emory Hospital, I always valued the opportunity to be with people during their low moments and their tough moments. Like I always saw that as an honor to be invited into somebody's space mm-hmm. when they were going through hard times. Yeah. And so throughout this whole movement, I've been able to meet countless families who were in the lowest moment of their life sometimes, mm-hmm. having lost a loved one. And I had an opportunity. I got invited to be a host for what would have been the 42nd birthday of Amadou Diallo. Mm-hmm. And to our listeners who may not know who Amadou Diallo is or was, he was an immigrant who moved to the United States with his mother really for educational opportunities. And they were a family of privilege. And she had this birthday party for him every year. And she had me come, and I was the host of this party, but I had never met her, and I had always heard so much about her. And many people around the country who've lost their loved ones to police violence, and Amadou was shot on the doorstep of his home all the way back in 1999. And she had learned over the years that when I was a college student, that moment was a big moment in my life. And so when she invited me to host that event, she was just like a queen of a woman. She was super regal, and like she was the star of the room, but she had just a sweet, kind soul. And I took Ezekiel with me, our son, and he was really the only young person there. There might have been some teenagers there, but they were no kids. And I think Ezekiel might have just been 9 or 10 years old at the time. And his youthful energy and innocence, everybody loved it. And she gave Ezekiel a whole lot of love. There were several.
You were saying she had learned over the years that, I think you were going to say that people were remembering Amadou for that moment.
Yeah,
when
What she told me is something that I never forgot, and she said it out loud there, and there were many mothers there who had also lost their sons and to police violence. And she said that most of the world only knew Amadou through one horrible moment. Mm-hmm. They only knew that he was shot 41 times on the doorstep of his home.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that's not what she thinks when she thinks of him.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to pivot people away. Earlier I said it was his 42nd birthday. It was going to be his 41st birthday. And that number was painful for her because for the past 20 years, that number 41 was so significant because it was how many times he was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to have this celebration instead of a march. And it was just a moment where she told stories about him, what he meant, where people came and told stories about what his loss meant and how it changed their lives. And she just wanted people to understand that he was more than that one moment. And we were at Riverside Church, which is a magnificent church in right above Harlem. And It was a moment where I had always tried to protect Ezekiel from these horrible stories about police brutality, but this night was not about that, and it just created a human experience for Ezekiel,
mm-hmm.
and I never forgot it. I mean, and the former mayor of New York, David Dinkins, who at the time I think was 89 years old, and he was like the legend in the room,
mm-hmm.
and he gave Ezekiel some love. Reverend Al Sharpton was there, and he gave Ezekiel love. And so,
yeah, I remember that night meant a lot to Easy.
Yeah, and it was just a cool experience for us, and it meant a lot to me.
Yeah, it reminds me of even when we had Botham Jean's family mm-hmm. over. Just like when you get to spend time, like you were saying, it is a privilege to be invited to be in the presence of and spend time with people when they're having to relive or recount some of their worst moments. And so another topic we talk about a lot in our house is mental health, especially in the Black community. For a number of reasons, including lack of access to quality care and stigmas around the issue of mental health, our community doesn't always seek the help we need for our mental health issues. But the brain is just another organ in our body. So just like we see doctors to care for our heart and lungs, we need care for our brains as well. One of the problems, though, is that a lot of folks just don't know where to start when it comes to mental health. It's overwhelming, intimidating, and it's an uncomfortable topic for a lot of us. That's why I'm so happy about the new podcast from Stitcher featuring Dr. Imani Walker, who you might know from the Bravo show, Married to the Medicine. Dr. Imani has been a practicing psychiatrist for over 10 years. In her new podcast, Imani State of Mind, Dr. Imani breaks down mental health and wellness in an accessible and approachable way. For me, this is super important to hear this information from a Black woman in the field. My entire family sees a therapist. And when that therapist is a member of your own community, it can immediately alleviate some of the discomfort of sharing personal issues with a stranger. It's so important to remember to take care of ourselves, especially as so much of our mental and emotional energy as Black folks is spent in the struggle for racial justice. Imani State of Mind gives us the tools and tips we need to navigate it all. I'm a podcast fanatic, and this has quickly become one of my favorites to listen to. Listen to Imani State of Mind right now in Stitcher, Apple, or your favorite podcast app, and make sure to subscribe. Married to the
movement. You know, this year we also had a chance to have both of Jean's family over to our house for
dinner. His mother and his sister. His sister actually lives in Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this huge Caribbean community in Brooklyn and even in and around where we live. And
because I don't know if you've talked about it before on the podcast, but you even found out about Botham Jean
Through my barber.
Through your barber, who is from St. Lucia, who lives here in Brooklyn. And so when we found out they were going to be in town, and Lee, your friend and one of their attorneys, was going to be here as well, you know, you asked if we could have them over for dinner. And I was initially nervous. I was really nervous. Because, you know, I can only, as a mother myself, I can't fathom what it is like to lose your son, especially in that way.
And Botham was a star, you know.
Yeah.
Botham was a gregarious, big, he was a big guy with a big personality, and his family loved him fiercely.
Yeah, and that's what really ended up being so great to me about that night. You know, I fretted over what to make and, you know, wanted to make sure it was going to be good and that the house looked nice. And I thought, okay, what are we going to talk about? You know, how do you make conversation? You know, should we be lighthearted and upbeat? You know, should we be somber and serious? Like, I didn't know what the appropriate mood was. But we ended up just sitting around the table and listening to his mother and sister tell stories about both of them, and just the way their faces lit up and the way they were able to still smile and laugh as they recounted some of their favorite memories.
He was a practical joker, you know, and they made him real to us.
100%.
And, you know, again, because when you reduce Botham or any victim of police violence to a single tweet or a single image or a hashtag or a trending topic, those things can kind of reduce people's humanity. And we just learned these kind of hilarious long form stories. Like, she told this story of how they had a bed and both of them ran and jumped on the bed and broke the whole bed frame.
Yeah.
And it was just too big to be jumping on the bed. And so, you know, it was just an opportunity to kind of learn and hear stories, but it kind of endeared not just both of them to us, but his family to us. And we ended up going to Dallas to be there with them for a memorial service. It was an event for their foundation.
Yeah, it was a fundraiser for the foundation. But yeah, that's definitely a moment that I will remember. And
one of my favorite moments, because I'm not sure of all the stories that you've told, I don't think that I've gotten to interact with a family so closely in that way. I know you talk with them all the time, but, you know, I hadn't. And just to be able to hold space for them in that way while they shared both of them. And like you said, it connected us to him and took it out of this realm of being a news story to, like, you know, this is a person with all kinds of funny and interesting and loving moments it with also, the family.
Yeah, it also magnified the loss for me as well.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I already knew and assumed that the loss was severe. I went, they had a funeral for both of them in Brooklyn that I went to, and his family was there, and I didn't even get a chance to speak to them. Mm. And, but being there and hearing these wonderful stories also made me want to fight harder for justice for him and for that family. And I, you know, when I think back over some of the highlights, I've had to tell people that any time we've gotten justice for a family, it's always been bittersweet. And I have to put, like, quotation marks around justice because there, you know, I think of justice as balancing the scale.
Yeah.
And there's no verdict that can balance the scale of what they took from Botham's family.
No.
And it doesn't, so... Yes, someone was convicted, but it doesn't even begin to repay the loss. But I will tell you, having fought for so many families that got nothing like that, it did give that family a measure of peace. And I've seen that with the family of Jordan Edwards and just a few other families who were able to get some semblance of justice. And each time... it just gives them a small degree of closure. I saw it with the family of Eric Garner, who had been denied justice in every way. And at the very least, when they finally fired the officer, it just allowed that family to close the door.
Mm-hmm.
And until that final opportunity for them to get a sliver of justice happened, the wound was still so open, and having that closure was a family that I knew well and I spent a lot of time with, and a family that I don't know, were you with me when Ezekiel got to meet Erica Garner as well?
When we came,
yeah, I don't know if you had that moment, but Ezekiel and I think maybe Kendi was with me. We came up to New York. We were living in Atlanta. We came up to New York to do some stuff with Bernie. And Erica Garner was still alive, and they were allowed.
Speaking of Bernie, that is one of my favorite moments as well. When we went to Vermont, and you got to introduce Bernie I don't know, was it the kickoff of his campaign or something? No, you did that here in Brooklyn.
What was
the Vermont one?
Okay, so definitely introducing Bernie at his first campaign event at the beginning of 2019 here in Brooklyn was a huge deal for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did his kickoff event in Vermont, and they asked me to introduce him again. And we drove up to Vermont, which was a pleasant trip, and the weather was wonderful.
Yeah.
And we went.
Was that over the summer?
Yeah, I think it was I don't remember when it was in the summer. I thought it was at the beginning. I think you said you thought it was at the end.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah. Vermont is always kind of cool.
Yeah, it was cool, but it was just a cool crowd. And while I had met Bernie and met the family, this was your first chance meeting him and the kids. And they had heard so much about him and seen him, and he was like a hero figure to the kids.
Oh yeah, it's so funny. I'll never forget when he was running the first time, and we came up here for a campaign event, much smaller. It's so funny to think how small timey that event was the first time he ran.
Uh-huh.
And we were up in Harlem.
Yeah.
And Zaya, she was probably just
our
like
baby.
2 or 3 years old at the time. I don't even remember. And so we're at this event, and you know, we're in the room, and all his volunteers are there, and this whole event is centered around Bernie. And then Zaya just looks up very sweetly and says, "Who's Bernie Sanders?" That was hilarious.
We traveled all the way to New York from Atlanta, I think.
Yeah.
And traveled all the way up there. They were even, she was even, they had coloring pictures.
Coloring pictures of Bernie, and she didn't know who she was coloring pictures of.
And then all of that, she was like, who's Bernie Sanders?
Who's Bernie Sanders? All loud. The whole group could hear. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So to go up to Vermont this summer, and, you know, she's 7 now. She was 6 at the time this summer, and have a little more awareness about, okay, who Bernie Sanders is.
Now she even understands, by the time you're 7 years old, you even understand politics a little bit. A
little bit.
You understand that there are elections and
Trump
president.
Bad, Bernie good.
Yeah, you know? Right. No, kids at school get that. And so by this time, she had an understanding that he was an important leader of some kind.
Yeah, and so sitting there through that whole program, that may not have been so cool. They were nodding off, and, you know, I was aware of the fact that everybody was looking at us because we were up, you know.
Up on the stage.
Up on the stage, and so trying to keep them awake and decent and not fighting or picking their noses. You know, that was tricky.
Bernie is... Actually, you know, for all the ways that people think of, I think people think of him as like a cranky old man.
Yeah.
And he is great with children and great with people.
He was so great. And my favorite part about that trip was when he came over to hang out, you know, at the Airbnb after that whole thing was over. Our family was staying in an Airbnb, and then his grown kids came over and brought their younger kids. His grandkids. We ate pizza and ice cream, and Bernie comes in, Bernie and Jane, and that moment, they're just grandparents and parents, like, hanging out, you know, with their kids, and Jane was, like, snapping pictures the whole night, just, like, doting on, just like any doting grandmother would do.
Right.
And then I was surprised by a couple of things. One, how tall Bernie actually is.
Right.
You know, on TV, when they imitate him, they're all hunched over or whatever.
No, Bernie's tall.
Like, he's an old man.
He shocks everybody when he's with
him. Yeah, but he was tall, and he was vibrant, and he has an amazing smile.
Right.
Like, I was not, okay, to be perfectly honest, like, okay, Sean is obsessed with Bernie, you know, is all in. I've been like, oh, okay, you know, I like him, fine.
You like some of his positions, but you didn't know him like that.
No,
you know?
But that night I was just like, oh, okay, like, he had a certain magnetism, and like, when I said something and he agreed with me and like would look directly at me and smile a bit, I was like, oh, this is what good politicians do, right? Like, not that he was being a politician in that moment, but they have a certain magnetism.
Well, you know, like, I said something to Bernie about how he wasn't political in a certain kind of way. And he corrected me, and he said, listen, you know, I've been mayor, I was in Congress, I'm in the Senate. I know my way around politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, but at that moment, that night, he really was just a grandfather, a father, a friend. And it was just...
And he was, like, listening to what I had to say about education and teachers and what I thought needed to happen.
And he's a great listener.
Yeah.
And then we were in downtown Burlington later, like in the town square.
The next day, yeah.
The next day. And
just hanging out because there's not a whole lot to do. We literally went into a store and took old Western pictures. They had one of those stores where you could like dress up in like roaring 20s or Western, and then they would take all these, they give you all these props and you take pictures. Like, that's what we did because it's Vermont.
Right. And so we're out just in like the town square. And he just walks up to us, and he's got a pack of socks. It's like, what you doing? He's like, I needed some socks.
Yeah, so Bernie Sanders just out walking, going to the store and buying him some socks. It was so hilarious.
Yeah. And, you know, he's been in Vermont for virtually his entire adult life. And while he was still a VIP around there, if you live in Burlington, you've seen him. And... And so he was just a guy getting himself a pack of socks.
Yeah, so that was really cool.
Hey, my name is Brandon Janice, and I'm the host of Sick Empire, a brand new podcast brought to you by the North Star. On Sick Empire, I interview New Yorkers who, in different ways, fight on the front lines for change in the city during the coronavirus pandemic. Please listen to hear a unique mix of stories from essential workers, small business owners, artists, and elected officials who are all experiencing the chaos of COVID in their own ways. Listen to Sick Empire on all streaming platforms. And you can support the show and any of our other podcasts by heading over to thenorthstar.com and becoming a member.
Sick Empire. Sick Empire.
Another cool moment I really want to talk about is when we went to see Ain't Too Proud.
The musical on Broadway.
Oh, my gosh. The you Temptations and I had musical. Already been to see it, what, maybe earlier this year?
Yeah. I heard about it, and I heard that it was amazing. And in case any of the cast or crew or anybody ever hear this, I didn't know. You and I have caught the Broadway bug. Like we,
oh, for sure.
We love going, and like that's a highlight, even just it's a respite for us when we're here in New York.
Yeah.
And we get a chance to go see that. But I didn't have huge expectations for it. Like I didn't know. I heard it was good.
Mm-hmm.
You and I went to go see it, mm-hmm. and it was actually spectacular.
Yeah. And you wanted to take you immediately wanted to go again and take the kids. And I was like, no, I don't. It's a little rated R. It's a little inappropriate.
It's kind of PG-13-ish.
It is. Like when we did go back and take the kids, I was like, why was I so hesitant?
Because it wasn't rated R at all.
No, it wasn't.
PG-13
at
the most.
I don't know what made me think that. But for your birthday, it was. You had a sad birthday this year. Lord have mercy.
We need to do it up this coming year. Like, yeah, yeah. 41, we'll do it. We need to treat like it was 40.
I know. Yeah, we'll do a do-over. But yeah, for your birthday, you wanted to take everybody. And since you had such a sad birthday, I said, okay, let's go ahead and take everybody. And so you were friends on social media with a couple of the cast members.
Yeah.
And you let them know that we were coming. And they were like, cool, when the show is over, you know, we'd love for you to come back and meet everyone. And I was thinking, okay, you know, we'd done that a couple times before, whether it was Dave Chappelle or some other show, you know.
John Mayer.
You go back and you meet people. And I was like, okay, cool. And so, but I was not, what was so cool, first of all, it did come right on the heels of all of that drama that happened in August and September with you trending and people, you know, the back and forth thing. You released this very detailed report, you know, with all the families, all the money that you raised, saying they, you know, they got their money, their lawyers, whatever. And that, first of all, that anybody had anything to say after that is just stupid to me. It's just literally dumb. It was dumb that anybody had anything to say before that, but whatever. But it was on the heels of all of that, the diamond ball, all of that mess. And I think, honestly, that you were, like, sad. I think that you were in a low place. I think we all were. Well, me and you. I don't know about the kids. And so we go and we go see this musical.
One, the kids loved it.
Oh,
it
my
was amazing.
Gosh. It was so good.
It was just as good or better as it was the first time we saw it.
100%. I enjoyed it. One, we had better seats the second time around. But I enjoyed it so much more. And so then when the show was ending, someone came to us and they said, hey, you know, we're going to bring you backstage. And we're like, oh, okay. And so, you know, we gather up all the kids and we walk outside and go around through the side door and come back in again. And when we walk in, the entire cast is on the stage, like behind the curtain. The show's ended and the entire cast is there. They haven't changed or anything.
They're sweating.
Just ended, and they all just like start clapping and cheering for us as we're walking in. And
I was
floored. I was like, what in the world? Like, we were the stars.
Because we were still in awe of their performance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then you go back there and these sweaty men and women who just gave it their all and have not even had a chance to wipe the sweat off their brow are back there cheering and taking pictures.
And like Ephraim, you know, Ephraim arranged it all. Shout out to Ephraim Sykes. Yeah. And
you know, it just meant so much because here we had come through this period where for a month or so, people were just saying every nasty, ugly, mean, untrue thing they could possibly say about you, about me, about the work that you do. And for on the heels of that, these people to treat us like we were the rock stars, like we mattered. Like those people had made a conscious decision that, you know, that what they heard about us or what was being said about us wasn't true.
Yeah.
And they were going to, it was a spiritual moment for
me. It was, and that's not an overstatement. It was a sweet healing.
Yes, moment. Healing, like that we needed and didn't even know that we needed, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so shout out to Ephraim and Jawan and the entire cast there.
Yeah, because Jawan helped make that happen,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, at Ain't Too Proud. I mean, you all loved on us that night in a way
and
that...
And it was the crew,
it was the cast, it was everybody.
They spent time.
They talked to our kids individually.
Probably a good 30 minutes we were back there
with
them.
Yeah, and took pictures and gave it advice and just spoke the most beautiful words over us, and like God used you all that night, and that is a moment that I will never forget.
Yeah, I me either. And I even every time I think back on it and reflect back on it, it just gives me good vibes, you know.
Absolutely.
And like I'd like to go back and do it again, but then it'd be weird the third time. Like, hey, I'm here again. You don't know if you still love me like you did the last time.
Right,
but
get some claps again. Yeah, yeah. No, that was ridiculous.
I don't know that we'll ever get. It was just a perfect, beautiful moment. And two of our kids are kind of Broadway kids. They're performers.
But you know what? Theater people are the best people.
Yeah.
They really are. It's one of the reasons that we've always encouraged our kids to get involved in theater. Mm-hmm. Like, theater kids and theater people, like, it's just such a supportive,
warm,
beautiful community.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I don't want to just take it all the way to something serious, but
please don't. This is supposed to be a happy episode.
No, but there are some things that have happened that do bring me joy that are just kind of weird quirks of who I am. Certainly, when we caught so many of the white supremacists from Charlottesville, you know, I don't mean to say that was a happy moment. There was some joy there. Because
it's rewarding and fulfilling.
Yeah, and justice can be so rare that Charlottesville itself, we're talking about happened at the start of the Trump presidency, and you know, in the beginning of the first year of his presidency, and that these white supremacists thought that in the middle of the day they could kill a woman, that they could beat a man, that they could assault another woman, and just do it with impunity. Had they gotten away with all of that, I think the precedent, to me, what sparked me to action in Charlottesville was the fear at what could happen if these white supremacists did those things and just got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were able to track down and identify and bring to justice many of those men who are literally still in prison at this very moment, it was a force of nature to make all of that happen. But it was one of those moments where it was the power of social media, because there were volunteers from all over the country that helped me track and identify those people. But it was one of those moments where I just felt like, even for me, that all it made having a following on social media worth it.
Yeah.
And sometimes the fame or the notoriety of being online isn't worth it.
No, and mostly this, not
right.
worth it.
But this is one of those times where I felt like I was able to leverage it to get justice for some real victims. And I later got a chance to go to Charlottesville and meet the family of Heather Hare, meet the family of other victims there. And it was just one of those moments where it was like, okay, it doesn't take back what happened, but at least people didn't just get away with these horrible acts.
Yeah.
you know, speaking of you know, the notoriety of being well-known, not being worth it, you know, it really used to annoy me when people came up to us, you know, when we were out and about. And, you know, really early on, I would say probably maybe 3 years ago, the first 3 years or so, it was just like we'd be out to dinner, we'd be going to the movies or something, and we just couldn't do anything without getting stopped. I think year four or so, I came to just accept it and, you know,
right,
whatever. But I would say this last year, you know, speaking of favorite moments, I think that there have been a couple of times when people have come up to us, strangers, mainly times when people have come up to me and I've just been out and about just being my regular self. I think I said this in another episode maybe, but it used to be that, you know, you were the one who got recognized, and I never had to worry about being recognized if I was not with you. Like, I look like every Black girl, in my opinion. But now, over this last year, that has definitely changed. And so,
particularly now that you got an Instagram account.
Oh, Lord have mercy, that Instagram account.
Maybe
right.
Somebody at Instagram can hear this and verify you. I know you want to get verified. You can get your blue check.
I don't
on.
Care nothing about that blue
check. Oh, that ain't what you told me.
I
you
don't
said
care
you
about
ready
that
for your blue check.
I don't care nothing about that. That'll be nothing to me. Anyway, I was just going to say that this year has been so hard and so tough.
Yeah.
And as I have taken the blinders off and allowed myself to see social media for how it can be and how gross it can be, it's just been really, really difficult. And because of that, I have grown to really appreciate when people, kind, sweet people, come up to us now and just, you know, affirm their support. It used to annoy me, but now I find it really comforting, you know, and just that someone would go out of their way to say, hey, you know what? I want you to know I see you. I want you to know I'm sorry for all the things I see you going through online. Like, I've had a couple of moments this year. One lady, I got on the train, and I'm so clumsy. I'm such an awkward Black girl. And I was, my hands are full of stuff. I was trying to read this book. I get on the train, and everything falls, starts rolling down the aisle.
Oh,
I'm embarrassed.
I'm surprised you didn't just throw everything away. Like, I know for you, once something touches the floor of the train, it's as good as gone.
I know. No, it was my expensive water bottle and my book. I was reading Ta-Nehisi's The Water Dancer at the time. So I pick it up. People on the train helping me pick it all up. And a lady scoots over and she says, you want to sit down? And I'm like, yes, please. Oh, my gosh. And so I sit down next to her, Black woman. And we're just sitting there quietly for a moment. And then she leans over and she says to me, you know, I don't want to be weird or anything. And you always know what that means. You
it's
know,
about to get weird.
It's about to get weird. No, she's like, I don't want to be weird or anything, but I want you to know that, you know, I know who you are, and I just want to say I appreciate the work that you and your husband are doing. And she said she actually works for the Innocence Project,
That's right. Yeah. Oh, I had met her at the national conference.
Yeah, and you had gone and you had spoken there, and she was like your person helping you walk around. But she was the sweetest, kindest lady, and we sat there on that train ride, and we talked the entire way home. Mm-hmm. And she was so sweet, and it was just such an uplifting moment. And she was like, you know, I just feel like I need to apologize, you know, on behalf of everyone for the things that you all are going through. And I was like, girl, you don't have to apologize. I don't have anything to do with you. But she did, you know, and we just ended up having the best conversation. And I've had so many moments like that this year. I've almost started to look at those people as like angels, just like that God puts in your path, you know, when he knows that you need it and he knows you need a little word of encouragement
The Bible, not to get to, I can't say not to get super religious, because the moment you about to say what the Bible says, you're super religious at that moment. But the Bible says that sometimes we entertain angels unaware.
Yeah.
That angels are in our midst and we don't even know it.
Yeah, you know, and I've just had a couple of moments like that this year where it's just been interesting to see the difference in how I feel, you know, how I felt a few years ago when strangers would come up to us and say things, and how I feel now. You know, particularly when I have, you know, certain special encounters. And so that's been cool.
Oh, I know we got to go. But I have one thing. I just saw on the wall here of our podcast studio, I saw this toy of Marshawn Lynch. And I had to tell just a very quick, I'll tell a very quick Marshawn okay. Lynch story. But Marshawn Lynch and two other brothers who are in the NFL all went to the same high school in Oakland. And two different years, I came out to speak in Oakland and their foundation. They have a foundation called Family First. They always would arrange for me to speak at this high school, but it would be people from all over the Bay Area who would come out, and we have these huge events. And the last time I went, I was always a huge Marshawn Lynch fan, and he's just a huge character anyway. And the last time I went to speak there, it was probably maybe like 1,200 people in the auditorium at Oakland Tech High School, and he just sat on the edge of the stage. I did two events back-to-back. We were there for maybe 5 hours. I gave him a full presentation. And he just sat right there on the edge of the stage and just watched the whole time, which made him kind of a distraction because he's such a celebrity in Oakland. And we went backstage, and I was really looking forward to talking to him. And I just given this, like, really deep, thorough presentation. Mm-hmm. And we go backstage, and, you know, I get ready to give him some dap. And all he really said, I don't even remember anything else he said to me. I said that I have five kids somewhere early in the presentation. And I get back after giving this presentation, and he just looks at me and says, "You got hella kids, man." That's it. I was like, that in my mind, I'm like
oh, that's
it. That's all it? You got right. from that whole presentation. He said, "You got hella kids, man."
That's so funny.
It's so Oakland, and he's so Oakland. But
well, look, we do have to go, but I do find it great because I think that we really could go on and on. I didn't get to tell the story about the guy on the escalator carrying that big heavy rug that went all the way down and came all the way back up carrying it and sweating to say something to me. But I think it's really beautiful.
There are lots of moments.
We got lots of moments, yeah. Right, baby? And here's the thing. Like, when the world doesn't give you your joy, the world can't take it away.
That's right.
You know
That's
what I'm right. saying? Like, they keep trying. Yeah. They'll keep coming. The weapons will continue to form, but you know, it doesn't mean that they're gonna prosper.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have a beautiful life together,
yeah,
a beautiful family that helps us make it through the hard moments. So
absolutely.
Glad we could do this episode.
Now let's go pick up the kids.
Okay.
All right.
Married to the Movement is brought to you by the North Star. We're so grateful to our members who make this and all the North Star content possible. Members of the North Star will always have access to this content first. So if you're not a member, you can head over to thenorthstar.com, click join now, and access this podcast, as well as a daily column from Sean King, show notes from The Breakdown, and other news for as little as $5 monthly. We super appreciate your support. Shout out to our senior producer Willis, our podcasting director Lysandra, and our creative director Tone for their work on today's episode. New episode live next week.